At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox just finished a sweep of the Toronto Blue Jays, winning all 3 games this week. They now improve their record to 40-35 on the season, and they currently occupy third place in the American League East. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find my handle at Color of the Iris. Joining me on the show from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Massachusetts, is Jeremy Schilling. Jeremy, how are you?
Wonderful. Couldn't be happier. Celtics win their 18th championship. Sox are on a heater. Boston media is starting to turn their attention to the Red Sox, as I expect the fan base to. So, interesting timing here with Boston playing well on a winning streak we haven't seen for quite some time. So, I am, as far as sports go, excellent, Jason.
Yeah, couldn't ask for a better time for the Red Sox to heat up, for sure. And congratulations to the Celtics, finally putting it away and winning Banner 18. Also with us on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
Not too bad. The Red Sox are the second most sensational thing going on in the world right now. Number one, the Hawk Tua girl. Viral sensation. So,
is it bad that I have absolutely no clue what you're talking about?
Oh, it's everywhere. Now that I've mentioned it in one of your feeds, it's gonna slap you right in the face. But anyway, I'm confident 80% of the audience will know. And if your kids are asking you in your car who the Hawk Tua girl is, I apologize. You can find me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. You can find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. We have a Substack now, which is a blog. It's panel style, more unique than whatever anyone else is doing with it. Check that out. Some podcast news, rather unexpected, but Cody Paulson has left the Bastards of Boston podcast. It was basically a personal decision on his part. His work situation has changed, a lot more on his plate now, so he didn't feel like he'd be able to really dedicate as much time to following the Sox as he has been in recent seasons. So he's moving on, and we are in the process of it's going to be a lengthy process to get his spot filled. And I don't expect to have anyone in place for a couple of weeks. There's going to be a lot of vetting, really thorough, multiple interview rounds. So we're going to do everything we can to, you know, get the right person in place to take us to the, you know, the next level. And we got some trade deadline stuff coming up, and in the next show, we're going to be focusing primarily on that. So, that's going to be a more prominent topic, as the days and weeks go on. But, yeah, that's what's going on in our world.
Yeah. Shout out to Cody. He's a great member of the team while he was here. Obviously, you know, circumstances in life can change things, and he made the decision that he had to step away. So all due respect to him, wish him nothing but the best and whatever he's doing going forward. But yeah, like Terry said, we'll have some new people coming in at some point. So keep an eye out for that. But for now, we've got a red hot Red Sox team to talk about. And look, you know, this month of June, that's exactly what we were worried about, is this schedule, because they had to face New York, Philly, even Toronto. You know, they're kind of down the, you know, in the basement, not in last place anymore, but definitely struggling. Bo Bichette is hurt. You know, they're talking about having to trade some people away, but they're still a talented team. So we were worried about the schedule. And so far, the Red Sox have not only survived, they've kind of thrived. And now we're at the point where there's less than 2 weeks left in the month of June, and they're five games over 500. They're closer to a wild card spot. You know, they're actually kind of thriving. The offense has come alive. You know, the pitching's been decent. It hasn't been as electric as it was in April, but that's okay. You know, they're still doing well. So, Jeremy, I'll start with you. Like you said, baseball wise, you're pretty happy so far. So I imagine the way the month of June has gone, you've got to feel pretty good right now.
How could you not? I mean, we'll get Terry's take in a minute, which will be aggressively pessimistic. So I'm looking forward to that. But I mean, how could you not? Last week I said I was on my excitement scale of 5.2. I'm like a 5.8. I'm still waiting for the bad thing to happen. I'm still, you know, we're going to talk about this more in a different recording, but I'm still expecting, regardless of what happens, for ownership to direct management to sell. And I have some takes on that. I feel strongly about how this should go. But they're still underwhelming from a big league talent level. We're going to get into some of the changes in the roster that took place this week and how it's starting to form and shape the offense, because the biggest thing is that the offense has been consistent. Shout out to Johnny Fontaine, who basically tweets at me after every recording. And we got into a little friendly banter about why they're so much better. And I mean, their pitching is excellent. The bullpen has been otherworldly, but they're hitting consistently. And on the nights they hit, now they're starting to win, and now they're hitting consistently, so they're winning consistently. It's a pretty simple formula. So we'll talk about it more as we get into the five up, but that's where I'm at for now.
Terry, how do you feel right now?
You know, I'm going to question the sustainability for a while. You know, I just, with the pitching, and we'll get into the trade deadline stuff in the next show, but right now this offense is red hot, and that's what's been carrying the day here. And in game two, I think we were like, we had a record of 1 win, 30 losses if we're behind in the seventh inning or later, and we come back and we find a way to win. So that's something that, you know, we've only done one time. And, you know, I had us winning 2 out of 3 anyway, so I'm not shocked that we did take the series. I didn't expect a sweep, obviously. But the mind-boggling thing to me is, look at this Blue Jays rotation. Kevin Gausman, Chris Bassett, Jose Berríos, Yusei Kikuchi. What would we give to have that rotation? And none of them outside of Kikuchi were bad. Kikuchi just, we teed off on him for some reason, and he was a little bit prone to the long ball throughout the game, but he's had a pretty good year. And I just, this might be the biggest underachieving team I've ever seen. The Red Sox are overachieving in ways I didn't think would be the case. And I'm just wondering, like, does Justin Trudeau tax the Blue Jays on how many wins, and that's why it's not happening? I don't know. Canada's kind of a finicky country when it comes to economics and all that. But, man, are these Blue Jays one of the worst underachieving teams? And this is their second or third manager, at least, in this window. Charlie Montoyo got fired. He was probably the only other one. And then Schneider takes over, and – So it's just, it's crazy to me. And they're going to have an interesting trade deadline as well. And at this point, I hope the Blue Jays blow it up. It's better for baseball if the Blue Jays blow it up. Put Kevin Gausman on a winner. Put Chris Bassett on a winner. Get Vladimir Guerrero out of there, since they haven't extended him. Is he overrated, by the way? Can we put him in the overrated category? I mean, he doesn't have a Raffy Devers-type impact.
I wouldn't say overrated just yet. I think that he's still young. He's still super young. He's a couple years younger than Devers. I just think that he's been surrounded by a team that is never the right shape for him. And yeah, like you mentioned, the amount of different managers he's had, it's like there's too much turnover going on there. They need to either tell him we're investing in you and we're going to build around you, or deal him too, because otherwise I don't know what they're doing up there.
He's overrated because he's Vlad Jr. If he was just some other prospect with a big personality, we wouldn't be talking about it. He's not having a good year, though.
Well, I mean, he's won at least one home run derby, and then I think he was, what, second or third in the MVP voting one year? He didn't win it, I don't think, but made a real tough go of it. I think that was in 21 or 22, and just hasn't worked. So I hope the Blue Jays blow it up. I'm embarrassed. I picked them to win the division. I figured this will be the year. The pressure's on for so many of them, including their front office. But, man, I mean, Tampa would have been a safer pick than these guys. That's how bad that was. Probably my worst pick of the winter.
I mean, at the very least, they're not in dead last right now, but it's not looking good. And I don't understand some of the moves they make. I mean, this, you know, the trade for Varsho was a complete fail on their part. They gave up Gurriel and they gave up Gabriel Moreno, who's going to be a future star catcher for Arizona. So that was a dumb deal. And, you know, their biggest offseason move in terms of free agency the last couple of years was Kevin Kiermaier. Yeah, he's great defensively, made a great catch in game 3 of this series, but he can't hit anymore. He's done. He's a number 9 hitter now. So it's almost like it's like they're too late on certain things. Like they're too late on free agents. And then when they try to go into the trade market, they just make moves that really don't make sense. Like Varsho is a great defensive outfielder and he's got some speed, but he can't hit either. So now it's Guerrero and Bichette that are trying to like drive that offense and they can't do it. They just DFA Biggio the other day. So Biggio's kid is gone. He's with the Dodgers now. He wasn't hitting, but still it's like this formula that they had where they had all these, you know, second, third generation stars. And it looked like, man, Toronto's going to be the team of the future. It's really kind of collapsed on its face. So I think at some point Bichette's going to get dealt and maybe Guerrero does too, or maybe Guerrero stays. They try to build around him, but yeah, it's not looking good. The future for Toronto is kind of bleak because they don't, as a franchise in a major city, they don't make the money that they should. And they're just not, they don't want to sign a lot of guys. They don't want to pay a lot of guys. So unfortunately, they're kind of like the Tampa Bay Rays of Canada, where they get all these stars, but they never stay. And, you know, they can't, in terms of drafting, they do okay, but it's just they can't figure their way around it. So I don't know. Toronto's future, if I were a Blue Jays fan, I'd be very worried about the future of that franchise because that rotation's getting older by the day. It's not gonna stay the way it is. That's basically keeping them afloat right now. And, you know, it's just not going to stay that way for a long time.
One question. I could probably save it for next show, but I'll do it right now. Probably wouldn't take a lot to get Justin Turner back for whatever is left on that contract. He's a right-handed bat, and he's had a terrible year, but he is heating up as of late, and he had a pretty good series. I don't know. It's something to think about.
Where would you play him? At first until Cassis gets back?
That's definitely an option. Yeah, you can DH him. He did play second base last year. I'm not saying that's ideal, but he's done it fairly recently. I'm just saying.
I don't know. I might be in the minority here. I'd say no. I mean, okay, if Toronto comes to you and says, give us Bobby Dalbec for Justin Turner, straight up, okay, I might consider it. Because then Turner at least goes on the bench. You can cycle him in it sometimes. But do I want to take away playing time from, you know, that DH spot just to get Turner in there? Who, by the way, like, he's been okay this year, but he's had a down year from when he was back with the Red Sox. So, I don't know. Do I want to invest in that? Probably not. But, again, if you're giving up nothing, sure, entertain it. But
I think just the money would... or part of the money would motivate Toronto. This is the time to do it. If he's having a great year, they're getting at least a mid-level prospect back. But he's had a terrible year. So,
yeah.
So, you know, that's why I would be tempted to swoop in, you know, to take advantage of that, capitalize on that.
Yeah, absolutely. And Toronto does have a lot of decisions to make. This trade deadline, this offseason, like I said, not looking great for them in at least the short term. So
if they blow it up, though, and get rid of everyone, it would be a very fast turnaround because they would get really good prospects back. And I don't know where their farm is right now, but I just don't think it wouldn't be like a Baltimore Orioles type rebuild. It would be shorter.
That's probably true. Yeah, it wouldn't last as long, but it's still a brutal way to go given what their trajectory was just, I don't know, 2-3 years ago compared to where they are now. So
just as an anecdote, it's kind of odd that they went and re-signed all of the kids from the ball players from the 90s and early aughts. Like all of these kids collected on this roster. And they're most of them are good players. But it's just kind of an odd anomaly.
Yeah, a little bit. And that's the thing. It was like, that's why a lot of people thought their future was bright because they just looked at the names. Guerrero, Biggio, Bichette, you know, like, sure, looks nice, but Biggio didn't turn out very good. He's a 29-year-old utility guy with the Dodgers now. Bichette, I think, is a good player, but he can't stay healthy. And Guerrero is Guerrero. I don't know. You know, he can flash at times, but can he be in shape and stay healthy? Who knows? So they've got a lot of figuring out to do there in Toronto, but luckily the Red Sox took advantage of them. They did what they should do this weekend in Toronto, took advantage of a bad team, took all three games, which was fantastic to see. A lot of good contributors, and we have a lot of guys on our top five to get to, so let's get right into it. Terry, you are in the leadoff spot. Who do we got coming in at number five?
I always get these sexy ones where it's hard to give the take, but I'll give it my best shot. We're going with Romy Gonzalez in the five slot. He's kind of a scrap heap guy. I think he last played with the Chicago White Sox, and that is, in fact, where he came from. The only major league team he's ever played for. Career 230 guy. 255 on base. Not really, you know, he's not going to give you a ton, but he's had some versatility. He can play either middle infield position, and then in the finale gave you some versatility as a center fielder because Rafaela had the night off. So pretty good series for him, just kind of doing what he can do. He was 3-for-8 on the series, drove in a run today, was 2-for-3 in the first game with a walk. So he's doing everything he can do to try to help, you know, keep the line moving. The one thing that gives me a little bit of pessimism about him is he's just not a healthy guy. I mean, we've had him on the injured list twice. He's come back this time and hopefully he makes the most of it. I mean, how many chances do players like this get to extend their career and keep a roster spot on a 26-man roster? So this is the team to do it with all the injuries we've had. And if he can have a hot streak that coincides with the team's hot streak, who knows? You know, he might lock himself in for a couple more years, if not on this roster, someone else's.
Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, he obviously provides a lot of flexibility. I think he's also played right. So he's played right, center, second, and short. That's a tremendous amount of flexibility. He also improves the lineup's athleticism and our ability to create havoc on the bases. And under the new rules, I said this at the time, the rules were changed ahead of that first season. The teams that are going to take advantage of this are going to become athletic. They're going to be in shape. They're not going to let certain things get in their way because of the pace of play rule changes. This is an example of a player that, you know, can help in a multitude of ways. And we're going to talk about some of this later, but when you have Duran, Romy Gonzalez, Hamilton, and Rafaela in a lineup, half your lineup are pure athletes. And we've seen in this game, we did a little bit of both. We hit the long ball, but where momentum builds with this offensive team, it's stolen bases, first to third. Hamilton hits a ball at Vlad Jr. today on the Wednesday game. He boots it. I think if Devers is running, he picks it up and flips it to the pitcher. But because Hamilton is who he is, he beats it out. I mean, it's just so many examples I can give you. And this is another player that you add in reasons why it's hard to defend against this offense if they're putting the ball in play.
Yeah, Romy's an interesting case because he kind of reminds me of Dahlbeck in that when you look through his career, he always hit at the minor league level. He's had 20, 24 home run seasons in AAA. But then every time he gets called up to the big leagues, at least when he was with the White Sox, he never hit. So they'd send him back down because the White Sox are impatient and, quite frankly, don't really know how to run a baseball team. And they would just kind of whatever. And, you know, he's a little bit older. He's 27. So I think they got tired of waiting for him. But this guy now could be like your next new Rob Refsnyder type, where you kind of plucked him out of nowhere, right-handed bat. He doesn't have the power that Refsnyder has, or at least he hasn't shown it yet, but he's hitting 279. So he's still putting the ball in play. He's not a useless at bat in there, and he's becoming more versatile by the day. I mean, playing center field today, like, that's, you know, didn't expect that from him. I thought that he was just an infielder, but played center field, made a pretty decent play on the Vlad Guerrero rocket that he hit. You know, he came in a little too hard on it. Did he misplay it a bit? Had to kind of jump up? Sure. But he still made the play. I mean, how often have we complained, especially here, like guys just, you know, booting routine balls? Dom Smith, like, you know, booting routine ground balls and costing you runs. So at least Gonzalez is making those plays and he can run. So I think that he's a valuable part of your bench. And look, you know, he's not going to be, he's not a future project for you. He's not a guy that's going to get, you know, everyday playing time at any point, or at least he shouldn't, as long as you don't have any more injuries. But to have a right-handed bat off the bench that can play multiple positions is very valuable, especially the way this roster is constructed. So he had a good series. Again, that play in game three where Hamilton just bloops it to center and he just goes for it. I mean, that was a play even I was watching going, oh, he's going to get thrown out. And if the throw didn't hit him on the way in, maybe he would have, but he showed that, like, his speed can cause havoc. And I think Hamilton even stole second after that. They weren't able to drive him in, but that's what this Red Sox offense has to do, is, like, create chaos. And Gonzalez doesn't have the speed that Duran and Hamilton do, but he's still faster than most of the guys on your roster. So if he can create havoc a little bit by doing that, I'm all for it. I absolutely want to see more of it. So good pickup by them. Again, just another guy they plucked from a losing organization that had nothing to, you know, didn't want anything to do with them, and they're making use of them. So by all means, you know, let's keep seeing him play and keep seeing how much he can contribute, because it seems like every time he's in there, either as a substitute or as a starter, the Red Sox tend to win. So I'm all for guys like that. So moving on, we will go to number four on our top five. And this is going to be a guy that through, I think, pretty much all of, if not most of this season, has been on our bottom five lists. But he's in our top five this time. And that is your closer, Kenley Jansen, who had two appearances this series, and they were two clean closing appearances. He came in, slammed the door, got two saves in this series, and quite frankly, has been pretty good lately. His last couple of games, he's had five saves, hasn't really given up any runs. He's been a lot more efficient. And look, Kenley is a guy that everyone looks at. We know what his situation is. Okay, he's on the last year of his deal. He's making a lot of money. This is a team that is kind of, I don't know, in the balance. Like, yes, they could be a potential wild card team, but then there are other times they'll lose six in a row and we go, oh, see, they're back to what they were. So when you get a veteran guy who's on the last year of his deal that other teams might covet, we sort of look at him and go, well, is it really worth keeping him around? This is one of those times where it's good that it's June and nobody's really making any big deals yet, because especially with Chris Martin just coming off the IL, dealing with what he dealt with, Jansen coming in and being able to slam the door shut the way that he has lately has been tremendous. So, and it's really, it's good twofold, because he's helping you win games, but he's reestablishing just a little bit. He's reestablishing his trade value. So other teams now look at him going, okay, his last couple of appearances, he's been red hot. So maybe he's just looking for an excuse to get out of there. And if we trade for him, he'll help lead us to the playoffs or help lead us to the World Series, whatever. Unfortunately, that's the way you got to look at it. If you're a Red Sox fan, this guy is not long for this team. You know, like, we'll get into it in another show. We're going to have a whole big show about it, but he's likely gone by August 3rd or whatever the last day of the actual deadline is. So appreciate it while he's here. It's good that he's coming in doing his job and he's not just, you know, blowing games left and right and not caring, but understand that it's probably short-lived, because the reality is, yes, you're 40 and 35. Yes, you've been on an incredible run, and we don't know where this team will be a month from now, but let's face it, most likely you're still going to be just on the outside of the bubble. And teams that are just on the outside of the bubble with a 36, 37-year-old closer was on the last year of his deal, they tend to deal those guys. So we'll see. We'll see what Kenley's future is. But for now, he's doing his job. And back in April and May, we were kind of killing the guy for not doing that. So credit to him for turning it around. But Jeremy, what do you think about the way Kenley's been so lately?
I mean, the biggest thing is the Red Sox are putting him in position to pitch in the ninth with the lead, which we couldn't say for large stretches of this season. So I'll just use one game as an example of this. Tuesday night, they're down. O'Neill hits the home run to tie it. Rafaela has the base hit to take the lead, and all of a sudden we have a lead in the game. We wouldn't have had a lead. And like, if that was in May, I mean, that's not how we were winning baseball games. So, you know, this is a byproduct of the offense starting to hit and hit late. And with the way our bullpen's been pitching, we're going to see more of Jansen moving forward, hopefully. I feel like he's starting to pitch more consistently, and that's having an added benefit on his stuff. You know, and then one of my biggest takeaways from his two performances is that pitch was down and off the plate in the bottom of the ninth with two outs. And I don't know if the home plate umpire had a dinner date or something, because there's no way that's a strike. There's no way that's a strike. So he got the benefit of a really bad strike three call there. And, you know, who knows what happens if that pitch is appropriately called, because then they have a runner on base, two outs, and, you know, the circumstances change. But, you know, he did his role, part of a great performance by the bullpen. 9 1/3 innings, one earned run, and only one walk. So the bullpen has just been lights out. If we can get to the bullpen with a lead, we're going to consistently win a little bit more than we have. So good for him for finding it and being a contributing member. As to his tradability, we'll get into that in a different show. But if we continue to win, some of my earlier takes that I had on a couple of players, including this one, are going to have to be walked back.
Terry, what do you think?
Well, not only do I think he's going to have trade value, I think he's going to have the most trade value of any closer that might be available. He's not just pitching well. I mean, if you look at his metrics on the season at this point, he's elite, really. He's got a 2.59 ERA, a strikeout per nine of 11.47, borderline elite. I mean, we've seen he's been higher in the past. I mean, he's been up around 12 in recent years, not last year, but within the last few years. And another impressive thing, how many home runs do you think he's given up all season?
Zero.
Zero. Zero home runs. He keeps the baseball in the park. So he's pitching very well. And is he likable? He is when he's pitching well. But I'm not a Kenley guy. I kind of put him in the Kimbrel category, just kind of up and down, but still certainly better than what we've had. And we've had some serious closer problems in the last decade and a half. So we'll see, but he's not a guy that I'm real worried about. And I did kind of think coming into the season that perhaps it would be Chris Martin that had the most trade value. And obviously, even without the recent IL stint for Martin, wasn't having a great year regardless. So he had a funky play today where it was somewhat of a comebacker and it took a high hop. And he probably shouldn't have fielded it, but he did and fell backwards, gave himself a little bit of whiplash, but made the play. And even Dom Smith didn't mess it up. But yeah, anyway, so Martin will probably get moved as well, but unfortunately we won't get the haul that we're going to get for Kenley.
Yeah, that was the misfortune of Chris Martin being 6'7", is that he gets a high chopper leg. He's like, oh, I can grab it. It's like, yes, you can, but you really shouldn't. And he did. He went like ass over tea kettle, and that was a nasty fall. It's lucky that he didn't completely spike his head on the turf there, because you fall like that, that can typically happen. So luckily it seemed like he was okay. But yeah, I agree. I think Kenley's trade value is super high right now. So another thing that we will get into a little bit later. But yeah, it's definitely something that the Red Sox are going to have to explore with him, because he's been red hot. So
one other sorry.
Sorry, go ahead. Yep, go ahead.
I thought you were done. One other thing about Martin, he's I think the oldest guy on the team. I'm pulling it up right now. June 2nd, 1986. So he's 38. So yeah, I'll be 41. But when his hat came off, I was like, my goodness, that man is gray. And so that's the one thing I have on Chris Martin. I'm only about 60% as gray as him. But yeah.
Well, I'll say this. He's gray, but he still has a full head of hair on him. So,
which is, yeah, the important thing, right?
Yep. I've always said I'll take the gray over losing hair. So
shots fired.
Sorry, Jeremy. Yeah.
You're not sorry. You know what you're doing.
You pull off the Mr. Clean look. It's all good.
Yeah. You guys get to see the reflection. So.
It's true. Yeah. It's like an extra light.
It's tough coming from the guy with Jason's flow, and I'm sitting here and the only bald one. But I know what you did there, Jason, and I know it was personal attack on me, and I can accept that.
You know what? It's bound to happen. You know?
You're like 2 feet taller than both of us too. So there's that.
Okay. I'll take that. Yeah.
I was going to say, you got that on us, so you can take that to the bank. Yep. another Red Sox pitcher who I think still has a full head of hair and is still pitching pretty damn well is number three on our list. So Terry, who do we got in that spot?
That will be Nick Pivetta, who had the best pitching performance of the series. Was it his normal, you know, dominant self? Not exactly. He did give up 9 hits, 3 earned runs, only walked 1. Strikeout numbers down a little bit at 4, but he was definitely more efficient than he's been in recent starts, and went seven innings. And the thing about the bullpen is when you have guys like, you know, Cam Boozer and Chase Anderson, Brad Keller, you got so many guys that can give you extra innings. It's just so none of these guys are really taxed. I mean, in games one and three, there were only three pitchers used. So, you know, it's a great weapon to have, but when Pivetta can go seven, it's just a bigger bonus. Of the nine hits, I mean, Toronto stranded seven base runners, and that was kind of a theme for them throughout the year, probably throughout the year too, but throughout the series. Again, Pivetta, another guy. We keep teasing the next show, but that's a guy that it makes a ton of sense to move him if certain things are trending a certain way. So it was nice to see. Maybe he'll go on a run. He's very streaky as a pitcher. You know, he'll give you five, six, seven starts that are absolutely electric, and then he kind of scuffles for at least a few starts after that. So hopefully we're catching him on the upswing right now, but solid this time out.
Jeremy.
You know, it just dawned on me that it's really pathetic that when we evaluate certain players, it's more for their trade value than their impact on this team.
Yep.
And we've set aside some additional time, so I'll just leave it at that. You're coming into a series off, you know, beating the Phillies, beating the Yankees. That starter can set the table for what eventually did happen. Was he perfect? No. But to give seven innings is just tremendously huge. Anytime we can get seven or more innings from anyone through the rotation in a given week, it's just a huge bonus. It's one or two guys that don't have to throw. For example, Boozer did not throw in this series, right? Bernardino was limited to two outs. Guys are fresh. We're ready for the next team. We have tomorrow, or Thursday's an off day, and then I think we go to Cincinnati. And there's no one that I can think of where I'd say we got to kind of manage this. That's just not. We're as ready and set up as we could be, and that is thanks to Pivetta going seven. Hauk went 5 2/3, and Bayo today struggled, but he went six. Now, for me, I'm a little bit more old school. For me, a quality start is my benchmark, whether you pitched well or not. And Pivetta had a quality start. So quality start is defined by 6 innings, 3 runs, 7 innings, 4 runs, so on and so forth. This is a quality start. It's a little better than a quality start. So credit to him. Credit to the pitching overall. And, you know, they only scored 9 runs in the series compared to our 18. So we doubled up on them. And, you know, this is probably the best series we've played all year. And we're starting to get healthy, including the bullpen and the pitching. And Pivetta is a big part of stabilizing the bullpen and limiting the innings exposure there.
I think Pivetta pitched the best out of the three starters this series, which the numbers are all pretty similar, but I think Hauk battled through his whole start. I think that he was chased a little bit early, and that was a close game, so it's harder to judge those because he was kind of on the ropes and the game is close, so they kind of had to pull him and, you know, save themselves a little bit. Bayo's line looks better than it should have. I think he got very lucky. He really battled the whole way, looked, you know, frustrated, looked like he was just kind of losing it at times, had a bases loaded, got a double play, and, you know, kind of got out of that. But, you know, Pivetta, apart from the long balls he gave up, he was good. And that's really it. Like, Pivetta will always be sort of in the back end of your rotation. So that's okay. If he's going to give up the long ball every now and then, that's fine. You don't mind that. He can still punch guys out. And in general, when he's healthy and apart from earlier this year, he has been. He gives you 6-7 innings, and he competes and has that fire in him. Like, I think that he's one of my favorite guys that has ever come to this organization. Like, I love that Bloom trade. It's the one Bloom trade I always go back to is say, like, I love that trade. You gave up two guys who are out of baseball for Nick Pivetta, who has given you, what, 100 innings as a Red Sox at this point? Over 100? Because he's had, you know, or, well, more than that. I mean yeah, starts.
Way more than that.
I was talking starts. So, like, 30, like, almost every year. So he's given you so much. And, yeah, the long ball will get him. And that's the only way the Blue Jays can score runs. They have to hit home runs. That's it. And he gave up two. And, yeah, like, you look at the numbers, 10 home runs and 10 starts for Nick Pivetta. Not great, obviously. Not great. But overall, he's still really good. He still is just such a solid force for you in the middle or back end of that rotation. And you know what? That's all you need. That's all you need, especially with the way the offense is going. If he gives up 3-4 runs, that's okay. Like, ride the wave of the offense right now. And if Nick Pivetta has to go out and, you know, gives up a couple of runs and isn't quite as sharp, that's okay these days. And as Jeremy pointed out earlier, the bullpen's been dynamite. So even if Pivetta's struggling and you want to take him out early, you can do that too. So he just gives you a lot of options, and I like his durability. I like the fact that he goes deep into games. I like his competitiveness. He's just a very likable Red Sox pitcher. And, you know, he's still going out there and winning you games. And I don't know what his future is. I know what I want to do with him. I'll save that for the other show. But he's been good ever since he got here. He hasn't been perfect. He hasn't been an ace, but he was never supposed to be. He's been exactly what we expect him to be. Middle of the rotation, good, not great, but not terrible. And he hasn't cost you anything. He's probably, even though the record may not show it, I think Pivetta has won you more games than he's lost since he came here. So ultimately, that's all you're asking for. And like I said, his future is up in the air too. We'll get into that more on the other show. But I know what I would want to do. I'm sure a lot of Red Sox fans have different opinions, but again, he's a good talent, and you got him for a song. Again, go look up what those guys are doing. It, Workman and what was the other guy? Was it Hanrahan? No, not Hanrahan.
Hembry.
Yes, the other H reliever. Yeah, they're gone. So you got him for nothing. You've basically had to pay him peanuts since he came here. So it's been pretty good. His value has been very good since he came here.
That was such a good start for Bloom that it was almost a tease. And he just didn't win many trades after that. But you are correct. He has won more than he's lost, but not by a ton. 35 and 33. Some of those were just lack of run support. For what it's worth, this season, his ERA is lower than it's ever been. Like, if the season were to end today, it would be his best season ever. His strikeout per nine, and that's obviously my favorite stat when it comes to pitching, a little bit lower than last year. But like I said, if he goes on a run, he can certainly, he can certainly blow that up. And you know, with those 8-10 strikeout games he's had. And then also, for what it's worth, started the most games in Major League Baseball in 2022, 33 starts.
Yep. Yeah, his durability is, you know, certainly one of his strong points. So we'll see what his future holds. But so far, he's doing his job ever since coming back from the injured list. So definitely good to see. So with that, we'll move on to number two on our top five. I think another player who has a lot of Red Sox fans torn this year. So, Jeremy, what do we got in number two?
Terry's favorite player, Tyler O'Neill.
Here we go.
He was a big-time difference maker in this series. 2-for-4 on Monday with 2 RBIs, hit 2 home runs, also drew a walk. Tuesday, he was 2-for-4, scored 2 runs, had an RBI because he had another solo home run, and he added a double. And then today, he was quiet, didn't need him, 0-for-4 with a walk and struck out today. So 1 strikeout in 12 at-bats. It's kind of an odd thing that he really only hits with no one on base because his RBI numbers are staggeringly low for a guy who has, was it 15 or 16 bombs? But it just goes to show you how important he can be to this lineup if he hits, because we don't have any other really right-handed difference makers. I also think that he's probably better served moving forward once Willier Abreu comes back as our DH. Get him out of the field, take the pressure off the knee, go swing it 4 times and sit down. I expect him to be sprinkled in, maybe giving Duran a day off here or there because he really hasn't had any to get Yoshida at bats. But it's a positive sign moving forward because he's the other side of the offense. So we have Duran, we have Hamilton, we have now Romy Gonzalez, who we already talked about. We have Rafaela, who are creating just chaos, and that's how we're scoring runs, forcing the defense to make mistakes. O'Neill doesn't contribute to that. And those other guys I mentioned, Duran hit a bomb today, but those other guys I mentioned really don't leave the yard. So between him, between O'Neill and Devers, to the extent we're going to rely on the long ball, they really have to be the ones providing the power. And this series, 3 home runs in his native Canada. I mean, he was really, really good Monday and Tuesday.
Terry.
I have to say nice things about Tyler O'Neill. 15, 16 home runs on the year. I mean, if the dude could just stay healthy and stay out of his own head, he's a 40 home run guy, at least in Boston. But, you know, he's streaky. That's how he's been. If he can stay healthy, this will probably be the second best season of his career with 2021. That'll be hard to beat. I mean, he was, I think, like 8th in the MVP voting. I agree with Jeremy. You can DH him at least against lefties. I don't see any value in putting Yoshida in there with a lefty on the mound, but so that's certainly one way you can try to keep him healthy. I don't know how to get guys on base in front of him. I mean, Duran is always in front of him, so it's kind of a wonder how he's not being driven in by O'Neill a lot of the time. Jeremy mentions Abreu. He hit 2 home runs tonight in his rehab start with the Wu Sox, so nice to see. I don't know. The Red Sox are off tomorrow. I don't know if the Wu Sox are playing and whether or not there's a plan to put Abreu in there, but I think he'll be back on Friday when we go. Is that Cincinnati series, home or away? It is away.
Yes, so away. Yeah.
So he'll meet the team in Cincinnati. That's going to be a wonky series, I think, unlike some of the rest. They're just that type of a team, but we'll get to that in the prediction show. But, you know, I'm not going to poo-poo O'Neill. He's had a good couple weeks, and it's in everybody's best interest that he does this. And he's a guy that I think is definitely gone. You know, Jansen's definitely gone, and I would put O'Neill in that category. Is Pivetta definitely gone? I can't say that. But they're going to cash in on O'Neill because he'll probably be hurt for at least 2 or 3 of the last 8 weeks of the season. So don't shoot yourself in the foot on this one. And your outfield is phenomenal. You've got no deficiencies in that outfield right now. I don't know how to look it up, but it's probably one of the best in Major League Baseball.
Once Abreu comes back, where we haven't even talked about Ref Schneider. Where's his at-bats going to come from?
Oh, he'll still face lefties. I mean, he's a lefty killer, so Cora will still mix him in there. The hard one for me is, how do you keep Yoshida in there? that's the hard one, but we'll see. And you know, we were just loving on Romy, but he might have to get optioned. Let's look at that. Who is the corresponding move? Well, you could get rid of Dahlbeck, I guess.
That I was gonna say Dahlbeck's gotta be the guy. Yeah,
he could be. Point. Yeah, and I wonder if I guess that would just be an option because. Yeah, because Abreu's not on the 60-day, so it wouldn't be a DFA necessarily.
Yeah, so first of all, you were correct. 2021, Tyler O'Neill was eighth in the MVP voting. That's how good he was. That was also the only year in his big league career that he played more than 100 games. So that goes to show you the one year that he was healthy, he was a beast. And was one of the best players, top 10 player in the league. But unfortunately, we know what he is now, and he's only getting older. Like, this is not a 24, 25-year-old kid where you go, well, maybe a new training regimen, and he kind of figures it out. Like, he's kind of just a musclehead who just, you know, he's a freak athlete. That's great. But he just, every time that he has to run down a fly ball in right field, I'm holding my breath. Because I'm waiting for him to grab his hamstring or grab his knee or something. And I kind of put him in the same category now as Yoshida, where I look at him and I go, I don't know how you really fit into the long-term future of this club, because you guys are talking about it. Abreu's going to come back soon. And I'm sorry, I want Abreu's bat in the lineup. And Yoshida hasn't shown you really much since he's come back. And David Hamilton has turned into a real player at shortstop. Like, so he's not, we didn't put him on the top five this week because he was hurt, you know, for the start of the series and, you know, whatever, but he's turned into a player. Like, he's starting to hit the ball well. He runs well. The defense is still average to below average, but he's turning into something. And I just, at some point, I don't know if there's going to be room for O'Neill going forward, depending on what this team wants to do. Terry, you mentioned it. This team is now basing it on, you know, chain hitting, stealing bases, being athletic. Tyler O'Neill wants to go over the fences every at bat. He's not a base stealer anymore. He was early in his career, but then he got hurt. And now he doesn't want to run anymore because he's afraid he's going to pull his hamstring, which I don't blame him. He probably would. So he's looking to launch every single time. And when he does, it's great. Obviously, we love it. Like, the Tyler O'Neill home runs are, you know, majestic and they look great. But he's not the guy that, like, if there's runners on base, he's not going to shoot the ball the other way through the gap in between the first and second baseman and drive two guys in. He's not the guy. He's looking to launch to the wall. And you saw it in game three. So game three was his worst game because he didn't have a hit. And one of his last at-bats, his third at-bat, he took a fastball in on his knuckles. First pitch, by the way, swung at it, popped up to the infield. And then his last at-bat, he gets a high fastball, launches it, fly out to the track. And yeah, sure. A lot of people say, well, in July, that ball goes out. Okay, well, it's not July. Like, there were runners on base. He probably could have driven someone in. It's just, I think O'Neill is just home run or bust. I really think that's the kind of player that he is. And sometimes he'll run to a certain pitch and he can drive it into the gap and get a double. But even then, it's like, he's got to make sure it's in the gap because he doesn't want to sprint to second base. He wants to pull up and kind of slow down because he's worried about his knee or his hamstring or something. So I like the player. I think it was a good deal to get him because, again, you know, he was just there. He was there for the taking. So why not? You needed right-handed power. He's shown that in the past. Go get him. They did. But I don't think he's long for this team at all. And I'm glad that right now he's healthy and he's producing. He has value. but I just long-term, I look at what I would want the lineup to be when I think what the Red Sox want the lineup to be. He doesn't fit. He really doesn't. Your outfield should be Abreu in right, Rafaela in center, Duran in left. Hamilton at short. Second base, you can rotate between Valdez or whatever. And then your DH is, I guess, Yoshida. As much as that sucks, I would like to upgrade that position. But, I mean, he's signed. He's here. You know, he's under contract. He has no trade value. O'Neill does. So, you know, again, that's a topic that we'll delve into more, but at some point that's the conversation that they're going to have in the front office, because, you know, it just, your outfield with Abreu, it's too good. Abreu is so good defensively. Rafaela is so good defensively. Duran is average to below average in left field, but that's okay. It's left field. It doesn't have to be a gold glover. I don't know how you pass that up. I don't know how you do it. Like, you can't put that faith in O'Neill to play 150 games. He's never going to do it. It's just, he's shown it through his career. He's never going to be that guy. So I'm glad he's producing. I'm glad that he's helping you win games now, because I think it's short term. And I think in the long term, they'll find a better solution. So he had a great series. It was, you know, awesome to see him go off. But again, kind of like what I said with Kenley, enjoy it while it's here, because I don't think it's for the long term. And certainly there's a lot more to break down with that, but that's for a separate show. So with that, we'll move on to a guy who is number one on our list, and he is here for the long term. That much we're pretty much assured of. So Jeremy, take us home. Who's number one on our top five?
Zidane Rafaela, who went 5-for-7 in limited action because they gave him Wednesday off to piggyback on the Thursday day off. So Monday he goes 2-for-3, scores 2 runs, hits the home run, so he has an RBI, adds a walk. Don't see that much. Does have the 1 strikeout. Tuesday he goes 3-for-4, double, RBI, does strike out once, has a stolen base, and he's just an absolute difference maker. And when he's hitting ninth and turning the lineup over to Duran, they seem unstoppable going into the two hitter, because there's people on base. It's those two guys. So the pressure on the defense is tremendous. You know, I think between those two players alone, they had 3 stolen bases in this series. So, you know, it's just, again, they're taking advantage of the new rules. You know, if there's 2 disengagements, it's almost a virtual guarantee that they're going to go, because there's no pressure. And, you know, with the emergence of Hamilton, and we'll see how long-term Romy Gonzalez is. But, again, I just harken back to the fact that this team is built for the new rules, except for O'Neill and Devers, because even Wong, you know, puts a little bit of pressure on you because he's athletic and runs well. I mean, more than half of this lineup is just really, really good skill set for the new rules. Now, the other side of this is, and I have this teed up on the stats here. So he bottomed out. He was hitting 193 into late May, but he really, at the end of May, he was at 205. He's now hitting 251. I believe he leads the team in RBIs with 41. He's scored 36 runs, and he's quietly hit 8 home runs. So he's on pace for like 16, 17 home runs. That contract is starting to look pretty good if this is his emergence. And, you know, what's the limit? I don't know. But – you know, I feel one is he's so much fun to watch. I think we can all agree on that. It doesn't matter if he's at short and center. His at bats now are becoming, you know, not much must watch TV, but it's just, especially if he puts the ball in play, it's electric. So I like the player. I like him more and more. I like the contract more and more. If this is the base, I can't wait to see what he can do when his first 2 months aren't a complete dud.
Terry, what do you think?
Well, I've said as far away as a month or so ago, at least, maybe even longer than that, that I'm convinced he's a Major League Baseball player. Like, he's going to have a role on a team. It's just, what's the offensive ceiling? We know the defensive ceiling is going to be close to Jackie Bradley, and people scoff at that. I posted something about that on social media, and like, this Jackie Bradley cult is just going to be here forever, you know? And he probably is the best defensive player I've ever seen, but man, Rafael is already showing you so much of that. But with the bat, he's still developing. Is it perfect? No. Is it an all-star level bat? No. He still has a ways to go, but he's got 10 walks on the year. That's part of the problem. But on the flip side, he's figuring it out at the plate. He's really starting to get good at making contact, and it might not be the most conventional way, but maybe that's going to be his path to figuring it out. He whiffs a lot. He's got a lot of swinging strike threes, so that's still a bit of a concern. But like Jeremy says, you put him in the nine hole, you've got his speed, you've got Duran's speed next, you got Hamilton's speed after that. And, oh, by the way, Willie Abreu, not slow on the base pass. He can steal bags, too. I mean, talk about anxiety overload for opposing pitchers. And just tonight, who was on? Was it Hamilton that was on first? I think he was. And you could just tell he was in Gausman's head. Gausman wasn't the same. His command was off. It was a very uncomfortable, sequence for him. And he made his two pickoff attempts. I can't remember if Hamilton took the base or not. I want to say he did, but
he did without a throw.
Without a throw. Okay. Yeah. And I mean, if you use both pickoff attempts, he's gone. you're not going to risk the balk anyway. But
he extended his lead off the base, because I was watching the Blue Jays broadcast and they were discussing it. They're like, look how much more aggressive his lead is. And then the very next pitch he took off and there was no throw.
Right. They did almost get him at second. It just wasn't fielded cleanly. But and I mean, it was a pickoff at second. But so. As you guys were wrapping up the O'Neill thing and I was getting ready to get into this Rafaela segment, I got to thinking, let's just say he's going to be, a career 275, 325 guy. And let's say Duran's going to be here for a while, and let's say Abreu's going to be here for a while. That's pretty close to your win, dance, repeat outfield. Benintendi, Bradley, and Mookie. Mookie's obviously the best of the three. Neither one of them are going to rise to that level. But collectively, as a trio, that's going to be as productive of an outfield, I think, as the win, dance, repeat outfield goes. They don't have the ceiling of Mookie, but I don't think they have the floor of Bradley. So I just...
Well, see, Bradley, as good as he was defensively, was not a game wrecker with his legs, even though he had trouble getting on base. He was not a good base runner. And there was this misnomer that always annoyed me, that because he was good at reading balls and good defensively, that he was a good base stealer. He wasn't. His jumps were terrible. He was not anywhere near as athletic of a slider as he was athletic as a defender. Between Duran, Rafaela, and Abreu, if the ball's in the air and they can run it down, they just cover such a tremendous area. They all throw pretty well, except for Duran, but he was not as bad as, like, let's say Johnny Damon was, who was absolutely terrible. And offensively, they are a threat to steal first and third, or second and third, by the way, at any moment's notice. I don't remember an outfield where they're that complete athletically. So if they get on base, I mean, that's, you know, they're healthy and they get on base. That's, I'd love that to be our outfield for the next 3 to 4 years.
I also don't recall a season where we stole third base as often as we are now.
I think that goes to the athleticism, Terry. These guys aren't just straight line speed guys. They're athletes. I'm going to say something. This could end up on Clown Takes. I don't remember, as we are currently constituted coming out of the Blue Jay series, I don't remember being this athletic as a roster. Does anyone have a team they can go back to and say that we had this many straight athletes on the team?
Well, just think about it. Where would we be right now if Trevor Story was playing shortstop every day and the kid we got from Atlanta, Grissom, was playing second every day? It's the base stealing that's really gotten us here. It's that extra level of being dynamic that's gotten us to, I think, 4 games above .500.
5 games.
Oh, is it 5 now? My bad. Yeah. Okay.
Well, and keep in mind, it's not just the base stealing that. So, I mean, Hamilton over Story. Hamilton's going to steal more bases than Story. He's also probably a better hitter. Story can run into one, but ever since he's come here, he's been a crap hitter. And Grissom, I don't know what, like, that's starting to turn into, like, why did Atlanta give up a 22-year-old second baseman for a 34-year-old pitcher who can't stay healthy? Oh, maybe that's why, because I don't know what his future is, but at least at second base, you can cycle Romy, you can cycle Emmanuel Valdez, who, again, game 3 runs into one and hits a light tower shot. So Valdez has power. He can't run. He's not a great defender, but he's got power at the bat. And then Hamilton just continues to hit singles and steal bases. So yeah, it's one of those things where I hate to bag on him, because again, like, Trevor Story's injury was a fluke, but I think you're worse off. I think you're worse off if, like, him and Grissom are playing your middle infield as opposed to Hamilton and, again, the rotation at second base, which it will be, Valdez, Romy, whatever. I think you're such a better athletic team, and Rafaela has allowed you to do that because he filled in at shortstop for a bit. Then, you know, Hamilton started to pick it up. Now they feel comfortable. Hamilton there every day, Rafaela in the outfield. And I'll say this, and you know how I feel about the Jackie Bradley thing and the Jackie Bradley cult. Rafaela will end up being a better defensive outfielder than Jackie Bradley ever was. He'll just end up being, he'll make more significant plays. He'll have a better defensive metric, because here's the thing with Bradley. Yes, he would make the diving catch every now and then, and everyone goes, oh, look at his arm. He never knew where the ball was going when he threw it. There were so many throws from Jackie Bradley to home plate that almost ended up in the front row behind home plate. Yeah, I know. But it's, seriously,
I have a few things to disagree with you over here.
That's okay. I'm telling you, and Rafael's arm, we haven't seen much of it. It's decent. I mean, it's better than Duran's, but, like, it's not. But that's okay. It's time to develop that. I just think Rafael's jump and his route to the ball is better, and I think he'll end up being a better defensive outfielder than Bradley, and I think he's obviously going to be a better overall player than Bradley because he has the speed. He's starting to figure it out at the plate. It just, all he needs to do is work on the strikeouts. Just work on the strikeout rate. He doesn't have to be a walk master like Casas, but just like, and Merlone pointed out on the broadcast this weekend that, like, he's starting to take pitch one a lot more. Like, he's starting to look at the first pitch a lot more and not just swing at everything. That's a good first step. We talked about that on this podcast. Like, take the first pitch, because they think, like, major league teams around there think you're going to swing at everything. So chances are you're going to get a bad first pitch. Just take it. Take it, and then you might be up 1-0, and then develop the at-bat from there. So if his plate discipline can improve, which I think it can, because for any young player, I think plate discipline is something that can always improve. That's something that you can always kind of fix. Defense, sometimes you can't. Power, sometimes you can't produce. But plate discipline, you can. So if he works on the strikeouts and he cuts down on those and he gets on base more and he starts to develop arm strength in the outfield, you know, continues his great defense out there, he's a good all-around player, and he's hitting ninth for you right now. That's how good your offense is. He's your number nine hitter. As Jeremy said, he turns the lineup over to Jaron Duran, who should be an all-star and is continuing to prove that he should be. Like, that's great. And he has natural speed and seems like a good base runner. So the development of Rafaela these last, you know, I don't know, month and a half, 2 months has been huge for this team, because back in April, after the contract extension, like, we were kind of looking at it going, oof, what are you going to do with this kid? Because if he can't hit here, you can't send him down. We talked about it with, you know, the money he's making and all that. That's tough. He's kind of proving that you don't have to worry about that. And he helps stabilize your lineup. At this point, with your lineup, you're just waiting for Abreu and Costas to come back. And then you're a pretty good force in terms of offense in the American League. So it's just watching him hit for power too. Like, he's starting to launch the ball a little bit, and warmer weather will do that, but he's starting to launch a little bit more too. That's huge. Because that was the one part of his game I wasn't sure, like, his power. I don't know if it was really there. It looks like it's there. So if he's a 260, 270 hitter, that's perfect for you. That's, him, Abreu in right, Duran in left, you're looking at one of the best outfields in the league. In terms of overall, I saw the smirk, Jeremy, like, not just offensively, but defensively, athleticism. By the way. It's what?
I said I've been smirking the whole time, but well, you got me on that one.
Let me just get on the record before Jeremy runs off with it. I also agree that Rafaela will end his career being the better defensive player than Jackie Bradley.
Yep.
I also tend to agree with that just because of he's so athletic. And he's already so instinctual when he's been thrust into playing multiple roles. The fact that he can go play shortstop and look like a shortstop and then go play center field and look like a center fielder, like, how many people do that in Major League Baseball? It's a rarity. The one thing you said that initially kind of just put me off a little bit was this, like, expectation that the fan base thinks Story's going to hit a home run. I hope no one actually thinks that he's a power hitter unless they only watch tape of him as a Rocky at Coors Field, because I don't view him as a home run hitter. I really don't. High strikeout guy. You want to jump in? Is that what you're saying, Jason?
Oh, no. I was agreeing with you.
Yeah, I mean, there's something because he signed a big money deal and he had some higher home run numbers. Those were so overinflated by playing in Colorado that it's not worth any attention and application of what he does now. And that's not even talking about the injuries. Wild situation for you to attack Bradley's arm. Wild. He routinely was in the top 10 with outfield assists. He was an all-time do-or-die guy. When Bradley was charging a ball, whether on the ground or in the air, and he had a play at the plate, cutoff men did not exist. He did not care if the guy that hit the ball went to second on the throw. he was an ultimate do or die guy. And we had so many upswings with some of those throws and big moments. So it's just, to me, it's an interesting attack on Bradley, because defensively, I don't have really anything bad to say about him. I always wished he was a little bit more athletic, and that's where I get so excited with Rafaela. Now, with all that said, I'm still hesitant to be that confident that he's going to be this good for prolonged periods of time. I hope I'm wrong. And I'm not saying he is or he isn't. I'm just hesitant to anoint him as this is what we're going to get. I'd like to see him show some patience over a longer stretch of time. And if he does, I think we're going to see better production for longer stretches of time. But, you know, there were times where in one series, he'd strike out 4 or 5 times on a slider off the plate. And it seemed like it took him a little while to be able to lay off that pitch, which to his credit, he is now laying off. But look, he's 22 years old. He's still getting better. He's years away from what he could be at his peak. So this has been extremely encouraging. And if he continues to play like this, I don't think he's going to be a nine hitter, you know, for very much longer. So, I mean, but excited for the player, excited for the team generally after a good 10-day stretch here.
Yeah, ultimately, I think the Red Sox view Rafaela as their own version of Atlanta's Michael Harris. And Harris had a better offensive pedigree when he was first called up, but he has the same plate discipline issue. He strikes out a ton, but good outfielder. They put him in center. They hit him leadoff most times, and they're a championship team. I think the Red Sox look at Rafaela and go, you're right-handed instead of left-handed. You're a better defensive center fielder than Harris is, probably. Just cut down the strikeouts, and you can be an elite young player in this league. And I think that's why they gave him the contract. So I agree. I don't think he'll hit number 9 for very long, but the strikeouts are a concern, and that's okay. It's okay to just say, like, you know, young player, he's got to cut down on those. I mean, a lot of young players go through that. Devers was a strikeout machine his first couple of years. He figured that out eventually. He still kind of strikes out a lot, but not to the degree he used to. Duran is consistently improving with that. So it'll come. He'll get there.
In the last 7 games, what do you think his batting average is?
Oh, it's got to be well over 300.
360.
615 in the last 7 games. If you want to go back 15 games, it's 386, 309 in the last 30 games. So he's up there. The other nice thing about him is he plays just about every game. He's had, what, 1 or 2 games off, with one of them being this series. So really good. And when you try to talk about what his ceiling is, like I said, he's developing, and you just hope he figures it out. His path to getting there, like I said earlier, isn't what I imagined it would be. He's not taking the route that you would normally expect. So hopefully he just figures it out. You know, hopefully his pitch recognition gets a little better. I think that's the most important thing. And then the rest of it just kind of falls in line. The one last nice thing, and I'll wrap it with this, is the moment doesn't get to him. He comes through in really big spots, and that's why he's leading the team right now and runs batted in. So that's important. That's great. That's one of the best things we can see right now.
Yeah, 100%. It doesn't look like, it doesn't look like the show is too much for him. And that's you know, easy to, you know, it's easy for them to, you know, for that to get to them at like 22, 23 years old. But no, he seems like he's ready for it. So continues to improve both, you know, defensively and offensively. And his future, I think, is pretty bright. So great series for him. Great series for the team. They come up with a sweep. And, you know, things are looking up going forward. So with that, we will wrap this episode. Keep an eye out for our Bastards series prediction show for the Reds series coming up this weekend. That'll be available Thursday morning. And we are foregoing Clown Takes this week because we have a little bit of a different idea going, you know, for this bonus episode for you guys. some trade talk, some future talk about this Red Sox team this year in terms of what they'll do. That July deadline is coming up, so we have some ideas and we got some thoughts on that. So we're diving deep into that. So keep an eye out for that as well. That'll come out this weekend too. And the weekend crew will have you guys Monday morning to recap the Red series. So everyone have a great weekend and we will see you later. Take care.